谁是一个当地人？
Extremely difficult, if not altogether impossible, to present an accurate, detailed character portrait of my grandfather, Gaon of Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal. It's because he was a giant in Torah, he was a giant in Chesed, he was a giant in Midos Tovos and Avodas Hashem. And I, as one who can only dream of achieving half of what he achieved, I'm certainly not qualified to offer a detailed assessment and evaluation of the unique personality that he was. I was fortunate and blessed to have spent a number of years with my grandfather here at YU. And my family and I enjoyed many, many summers in Chicago at my grandparents' home during my youth. My grandfather, to our family, was the ultimate role model par excellence. He was the gold standard that we all aspire to emulate. And to this day, it's his legacy that continues to inspire his children, his grandchildren, and thousands of his Talmidim and admirers. And I hope that perhaps through sharing some stories, thoughts, memories of my grandfather Zatzal, we will be able to enhance our appreciation for this Gadol b'Yisrael and thereby inspire our own Avodas Hashem as well. My grandfather was very well known and respected throughout the Torah world for his godless b'Torah. It's remarkable to read in the back of Sefer Igros HaGrid, Hilchos Melachim, a letter that he wrote when he was 10 years old, living in Warsaw, Poland, to his older brother, the Rav Zatzal, who at that time was studying in Berlin. The letter is an original Shtickel Torah written by a 10-year-old boy quoting a Rambam in Hilchos Chovah LeMazik, a Rambam in Hilchos Ritzeach, a Mishnah LeMelech, Alter Par Enfer, a Shver Rambam in Hilchos Melachim. The age of 10. When he was 12 years old and his father, Moshe Soloveitchik Zatzal, came in 1929 to New York to assume position of Rosh Hashiva here at Reitz, he left my grandfather, who was his youngest child, his two daughters and his wife behind in Warsaw for a year until they were able to join him here in New York. My grandfather that year learned b'chavrusa with Rav Yitzchak Kuttner Zatzal, who was at that time a young man of 23 years old. And together they learned from Maseches Bava Kamma all the relevant Rambams. And when it came time for the Bar Mitzvah celebration, my great-grandfather, Moshe Soloveitchik, was not there. So my grandfather wrote his own Shtickel Torah. Again, an original Chiddush that he presented at his Bar Mitzvah. And when he came to New York in 1930, after his Bar Mitzvah, he told his father what he had said. And his father said, oh, that's a Chaim Shtickel. My father said the same Bar, the Sugya of Pashei Kamazik. My grandfather told me on one occasion that while he was still a yeshiva bacher here learning in YU in his father's shir, that time his father was still alive, so he must have been in his older teenage years, at most in his young 20s. His family hosted Rav Meir Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, the son of the Netziv, here for Sukkot in New York. They sat down, first night in the Sukkah. Moshe Soloveitchik Zatzal told the people sitting around the table, have kavana to be mekayim the mitzvah sachilas kezayis in the Sukkah. So my grandfather said to his father, L'chor, that's Tolei in the Machlokas Rishonim, whether a mitzvah is put on the first night of Sukkot or not. If there is a Ptur mitzvah on the first night of Sukkot, then it's the same mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah as there is the rest of the Sukkot nights. If a mitzvah is chayiv in Sukkot the first night of Sukkot, that means there's an additional chiyuv of Achilas Kezayis to Sukkot the first night of Sukkot. So the kavanah depends on the Shittas Rishonim, and there's a mitzvah, Ptur, or chayiv in Sukkot on Leil Rishon of Sukkot. His father and my grandfather engaged in a masu matan, shal Torah. Now read that Shtickel Torah is a little more well known. At that time, it probably wasn't printed yet. And Amir Berlin was so impressed, so excitedly, he turns to my grandfather. He says, Arla, one day I'm going to open a yeshiva called Karen B'Yavna. I want you to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Now, Amir Berlin didn't live to see that dream fulfilled. Karen B'Yavna was established after his Patira. Our grandfather never was Rosh Hashiva in Karen B'Yavna, despite Mary Berlin's dreams. But at the very least, saw from the story how Mayor Berlin was so impressed and so full of admiration for the young Talmud Chacham sitting at the table, who at that time was still yeshiva bacha, learning in yeshiva. When my grandfather finished learning as a Talmud here in yeshiva, he learned in his father's shir of Moshe Soloveitchik Zatzal. Later he learned in his older brother the Rav's shir for a couple of years. His first job was an assistant Rebbe to Rav Shufenthal in the high school. He gave a Hachana shir, a Chazara shir every day. And then shortly thereafter, he accepted a position as a Magid shir at MTJ, where he forged a very, very close relationship with his mother's first cousin of Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. And Rav Moshe, in 1945, wrote about my grandfather, at that time was 27 years old. He wrote about him, he's a ma'ar gadol v'torah v'yira, talmud chacham gadol charif u'baki. A compliment like that coming from Moshe Feinstein certainly carries a lot of weight when spoken about a young, relatively young man of 27 years old. A few years later, 1947, after teaching as a Rebbe in MTJ, he was offered a position as a Magid Shir in Chaim Berlin. And he gave the second highest shir in the yeshiva under Rav Huttner, starting in 1947-48 and through the year of 1960. About 13 years as a Rebbe in Chaim Berlin. One of the Talmidim in his shir at that time, the Novominska Rebbe, current Novominska Rebbe, recalled in a hesped he gave after my grandfather's patira, his astonishment as a Talmud in my grandfather's shir. My grandfather first came to Chaim Berlin, and he saw the honor bestowed upon him by Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner told my grandfather to sit up in the front of the Beis Medrash, in the very place where Rav Huttner himself would stand and daven during the tefillos in the yeshiva. And that was the seat he gave my grandfather in the Beis Medrash of Chaim Berlin. His derech halimud and his shiurim was to analyze each and every one of the shitos of Rishonim and the sugya that he was learning. Even the Rishonim at that time, which were not very popular, Chedusha HaMe'iri, for example, analyzed the shita of each and every Rishon and every sugya he was learning. I remember from his later years, the tremendous baki in the Chedusha HaMe'iri on Shas, he would frequently quote the Me'iris from different meseftas. Sometimes in relation to a psak halacha that he was giving, he would bring a backup, a raya from a meiri here, a meiri there. Because he worked through every shita and every sugya, organized in his mind and remembered them clearly. The subtle dikdukim, the subtle differences between every shita that we showed him and every sugya that he did. Avraham Lichtenstein Zatzal, who was a Talmud of my grandfather in Chaim Berlin as well, recalled that my grandfather, when he saw sugi, he saw every tree in the forest. Every tree, every leaf, analyzed every shittas of Rishonim. In 1960, after 13 years in Chaim Berlin, my grandfather came back to YU to give shir here for the next 6 years or so until 1966 when he moved to Chicago. I was speaking to Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, my grandfather's nephew, who was in my grandfather's shir at the time. He said he was astounded. It was remarkable how any time he posed a question to my grandfather, or any time someone else posed a question to my grandfather, in Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, not just the Aruch Chaim Yerodea common questions, but the more complex questions in Choshen Mishpat, Evan Ezra, Gittin V'Kedushin, Dine Mominus, on the spot he would give him the Shittas Rishonim on that particular sugya. Bottom line, Psak Halacha, here's the Psak. Wasn't afraid to paskin, and to paskin right then and there. This Gadlus B'Torah, though, although certainly perhaps in part can be attributed to the fact that he was born into a family of Torah royalty, with Mechanchim on the Madrega of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, but undoubtedly his Gadlus B'Torah certainly stemmed from his Asmata Rabba. And those who remember him from Chaim Berlin described to me how he was so engrossed in his learning when he would take the subway from his home in Washington Heights, the number 3 train down to Chaim Berlin, East New York at that time, he would frequently miss his stop. He was so caught up in his learning. He would realize he had missed his stop when the number 3 train hit the end of the line at New Lots Avenue. Then he had to ride it back to East New York in Chaim Berlin, often arriving late. The Mashgiach there, who was trying to ensure that the Siddurim and the Shiurim were following the proper schedule, would tell my grandfather that if you come late after the time for the Shiur, you can't give the Shiur anymore. So he'd say, okay, he could simply go down to his Shiurim, sit down and learn by himself. But the Talmidim, who were so respectful, who loved him so much because of his devotion to them, would inevitably come down and follow him and sit down and listen to him learn. The Mashiach would come down and say, Rav Aaron, I thought you're not supposed to be giving Shiur after the regular time of Shiur. He said, I'm not giving Shiur. I came down to learn. Talmidim followed me. They want to sit and listen. I'm just learning. My uncle remembers how on Shavuos morning, after everyone came back from the night at yeshiva learning all night, and they would go to sleep, my grandfather would be up learning on the porch. And he would say to my uncle, I didn't stay up all night just to sleep all day. And Talmidim remember how he would sit, stooped over a gemara for hours on end, the Hasmara Rabbah. That undoubtedly was the primary source of his godless Torah. Despite, though, what you might consider his privileged, unique family background, my grandfather Zatzal shared a lot in common with the typical American yeshiva bachur. That's because his high school education was here in MTA. When he came here at the age of 13, Rabbi Victor Miller, who was learning in the yeshiva at that time, taught him English. On the side, spoke only Polish and Yiddish. He had to function MTA, so Miller taught him English. Graduated with an undergraduate degree from Yeshiva College, he majored in math. And he received a law degree from NYU Law School. He told me that his mother very much wanted him to pursue a graduate degree, so he chose law because he felt that would give him time to learn. Apparently did. But I should point out that during his time at NYU Law School, he didn't just do what he had to do to get by. He excelled and astounded the professors and the administration there as well. And that was illustrated with a beautiful story I heard from Rav Nissen Shulman, Shlita Rebbe here at Yeshiva, father of YP Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Eliyahu Baruch Shulman. Shulman related to me how back in August of 1952, he was walking near West 4th Street in Manhattan, passed by the brand new building that housed the admissions office to NYU Law School. And he had, in the past, been entertaining thoughts of attending law school himself. So he figured, I'm walking right by the admissions office for NYU Law School. I'll walk in, I'll see if I can apply. Walks into the brand new building, the admissions office. He meets the director of admissions, Mr. Bertel Sparks. And he asks him about the admissions process. What do I have to do to apply for law school here? And Mr. Sparks explains to him the requirements, pre-admission testing, application, grades, transcripts. And then he says, when do you want to begin your schooling here at NYU? So if Shulman said, well, I was hoping to begin next month, September. So Mr. Sparks laughed and he said, next month? You can't apply right now in August for next month's semester. I'm sorry, it's not going to work. So Shulman said, okay, fine, thank you very much. Begins to walk outside. And as an afterthought, Mr. Sparks says, where did you do your undergraduate studies? So Rabbi Shulman said, at Yeshiva University. He said, Yeshiva University, okay, you're accepted, full scholarship. So Rabbi Shulman said, thank you so much, but you know, a minute ago you told me it wasn't possible to apply at such short notice, and now you're accepting me with a full scholarship without having seen any of my test grades, my scores, my paperwork. And upon inquiring, he realized and he was told that in recent years there had been a student from Yeshiva University, Aaron Soloveitchik, who had so impressed the professors and the administration that when they heard another student from YU was applying, they would take him at any cost. Because YU's reputation skyrocketed after those years in the 1940s. In addition to that, which he shared in common with the ordinary, average American yeshiva students, my grandfather was very beloved by his Talmidim for his warmth, for his willingness to speak with the Talmidim, offer them etzos. One Rosh Hashiva here at the time in the 60s told my grandfather he should put on his office door a school psychologist. It's his second job here. Every Thursday when he'd give his popular Hashkafa Shiurim, Talmidim from other Shiurim would pile into the Shiur room, standing room only, to hear how he related Parshas HaShavua to contemporary events in a very practical manner. Talmidim also recognized that he was incredibly dedicated to them. Speaking to a Talmud of his from Chaim Berlin, told me he remembers one day in the late 50s when there was a terrible blizzard in New York City. The yeshiva was shut down. There was nobody in Chaim Berlin besides the two or three out-of-town boys living in the dorms. And this Talmud was one of them. He was downstairs at 11 o'clock in the morning eating, and he sees out the window someone trudging through the snow in the deserted streets. So my grandfather coming from his long subway ride, trudging in the deep, deep snow, on a day when no one, Talmidim, Rabbeim, no one was in the yeshiva, except for two or three Talmidim, he was there because he was going to give a shir to teach Torah to his Talmidim. And it wasn't uncommon for him to visit a Talmud of his sick in the dormitory, in person. He would come in to see how he was doing. It was because of this warmth and how he related so well to his Talmidim that he presented a very real role model for them to look up to aspire to emulate. What is remarkable, though, is despite his godless b'Torah, his hasmada, his prominence, his stature, my grandfather was an incredible anav. And this is illustrated by the following beautiful story that was told to my brother by a very prominent Muslim of our yeshiva, who's currently a well-known mechanech. Told my brother that he first met my grandfather and he came to YU as an MTA freshman, ninth grade MTA student in the 1960s. His first week in yeshiva, he hears there's a ball game before davening early in the morning. Wanted to play? Problem was, he needed a place to keep his book bag. So he walks into the main building, the Beis Medrash. It's pretty empty that early in the morning. Sees one man learning at the table, walks over to him and says, "Excuse me, can you watch my books for me while I go play?" The response was, "Do you want me to be a Shomer Chinam or a Shomer Sachar?" So this empty impression said, "A what?" So the man explained to him, "Oh, I see you don't know the dinim of Dalet Shomrim. Have a seat, I'll explain them to you." And then he went to explain in great detail Dalet Shomrim, the Chiyuvim, the Peturim, the Shibudim, the ins and outs of Dalet Shomrim. By the time the shir was finished, there was no time to play the ball game anymore. It was over for that morning. Next morning, this empty student, very determined, comes back to yeshiva, walks back in, now armed with working knowledge of Dine Dalet Shomrim, approaches this man sitting in the Beis Medrash and says, "Can you be my Shomer Chinam, please, to watch these books for me while I go play ball?" Response was, "Certainly." This young man walks out, engages in his ball game, returns after the game to retrieve his book bag. The Shomer says to him, "I was Shomer Kedinatri Inshi, I wasn't Pashaya." "Thank you very much," takes the book bag back. Next morning, repeats itself once again, drops off his books by his regular shomer. And so it was, day after day. And on occasion, he recalled, he would even see his shomer walking out across the street, schlepping the book bag with him as he walked, to be shomer on that pikadim that he was given. Finally, one morning, he walks in to deliver his books to his shomer, and our Gaon of David Lifshitz Zatzal was in the Beis Medrash that morning at that time. He sees what's going on. He approaches this young boy. He says, "What are you doing?" The student says to him, "Oh, this man just watches my books for me while I go play." The Rebbe says, "You know who that is? That's Rabban Soloveitchik when the Gedolei Hador." "So, I'm so sorry, I didn't know." That was it for the Shmirah. Didn't come back the next morning. My grandfather sees him a few days later. He says to him, "What happened? Was I Pashay? Was I not a good Shomer? Why didn't you come back to me?" Never dawned on him for a moment that maybe it was not with Lefichavodo to be stopping some student's book bag in the streets of Amsterdam Avenue. Why should it be Lefichavodo? A chesed for another Ben Torah, another Jew? What do you mean not Lefichavodo? Never even dawned on him that it shouldn't be something that he would consider doing. Not for a moment. Socius is anova. Didn't see himself as superior to anybody else. Opportunity to do a chesed, not get him to Yevoi, be a shomer for him, why not? My uncle related to me that on one occasion, a student, Rabbi Dulitz's shir in MTA in the 1960s, forgot his lunch at home. So his mother, who lived in the Heights, his mother walks into the yeshiva building, she sees my grandfather. She said, I'm so sorry to trouble you, can you please ask someone to give this lunch bag to Moshe Liebler in Rabbi Dulitz's class? Certainly, takes the bag. Next thing Rabbi Dulitz knows is a knock on his door. Rabbi Soloveitchik walks in, whole shir stands up. Rabbi Dulitz says, yes, Sir Soloveitchik, what can I do for you? I have Moshe Liebler's lunch. Can you please give it to him? Didn't dawn on him. Not bekavadik for me to walk in to give a high school boy his lunch. What do you mean? It's a chesed for a Jew, for a Ben Torah. How can I not do a chesed? Such was his anava. My grandfather often related to me a story which Rav Tversky Shuta pointed out to me is also recorded in Rav Meir Berlin's memoirs, Mevelajin Ad Yerushalayim, with slight variation. My grandfather would often tell me that somebody once asked a number of Gedolei Torah in Europe what the role of a Rav is. So the Aruch HaShulchan responded, the role of a Rav is to paskin shailos. Mitzvah Petterberger responded, the role of a Rav is to give Musar. Rav Paul Shapiro, Rosh Hashiva Velajin said, the role of a Rav is to learn. And Reb Chaim, true to form, responded, the role of the Rav is to do chesed for the tzibur. My grandfather was an incredible ish chesed. When I spoke to a Talmud of his who was in a shir in Chaim Berlin over 50 years ago, this Talmud literally started crying on the phone as he recalled the chesed that my grandfather and my grandmother extended to him. He was an out-of-town bacher. He was a yosom. He came to Chaim Berlin in 1957-58. He started crying 52 years later, recalling the chesed that was showered upon him. He was given his own private bedroom in my grandparents' home in their apartment on 86th Street in the Upper West Side. Whenever he'd come for Shabbos, he said the care and concern that they showed him, always ensuring he had proper clothing to wear, how my grandfather would see to it that his mother and Almana would receive plenty of food from Strites before Pesach so that she would have supplies for the Yom Tov. 52 years later, he started crying, recalling the incredible chesed that he was recipient of. When one of his Talmidim during his years in Chicago was hospitalized in Rochester, Minnesota in the Mayo Clinic, my grandfather traveled from Chicago to Minnesota right before Yom HaRoyim to bring him food that he would have for the Yom Tov. Even though my grandfather knew at the time that he had some sort of small virus, and therefore when he walked into the hospital, he refused to go into the room to see his Talmud. He didn't want to get him sick. Left the food for him, spoke to him from the hallway, was Mavaka Chola from the doorway, and then left. Round trip, Chicago to Minnesota and back. A Rosh Hashiva in his 60s. Personally performing such a chesed for his Talmud. So many numerous stories that illustrate the very same point. One of my uncles related how in Chicago when there was a Jewish family with a number of disabled children who were in the process of being evicted from their apartments, it was unfortunately owned by a Jewish individual, and this father with disabled children was at wit's end. Where am I going to live? I'm going to be out in the streets in a few weeks, in a month. He spoke to a number of rabbanim. They tried to help to no avail. Someone told him, there's Rav Soloveitchik, he'll help you. But I don't know him. He'll help you anyways. Came to my grandfather, who on the spot picked up the phone, called the lawyer who was serving the eviction notice, insisted that the eviction notice be dropped. Within a day, it was taken care of. And my grandfather then realized that this tenant could not continue to stay in this apartment for much longer, went house to house, door to door, personally, with one of the Baobatim in Chicago, who told me the story as well, to raise funds for this family who he did not know to buy or rent an apartment for themselves. And when the same family made a bar mitzvah in January, in one of the coldest months in one of the cold cities in the Midwest, in Chicago. As Baal Bus related to me, it was 20 degrees below zero. My grandfather walked from Peterson Park about 2 miles to West Rogers Park to this man's son's bar mitzvah because he didn't want to feel like nobody cared and that nobody was coming. It was so cold that people weren't going to shul that day. So my grandfather figured I have to walk to the bar mitzvah to make sure that he has proper representation of showing at his son's simcha. So many stories along these same lines. My grandfather would often tell me, Chazal tell us, Mahu rachum af ata heye rachum. We have to emulate a Kadosh Baruch Hu's rachamim. Pasuk says, V'racham of apol ma'asav, that Kadosh Baruch Hu has rachamim on every creature, every creation. He'd say that to me time and again. One of my uncles told me, he remembers walking to my grandfather on the Lower East Side, they saw a drunk in the street. My grandfather picked him up and walked from apartment building to building, looking for the place that he lived until he found his apartment and brought him home personally. A Rosh Hashiva. Doing chesed personally. I remember in 1995 when my grandfather at that time, towards the end of his life, was hospitalized fairly frequently. In January of 1995, he fell, fractured a bone in his foot, was given a cast. He was in the hospital, I think, for close to a month. And after 2 weeks in which I hadn't had a chance to speak to him, I finally got him on the phone. And I said, hello, Zadie. And before I had a chance to ask him how he was, he says to me, how's your grandmother? How's your grandmother? Because my father's mother at that time was fighting a very serious pneumonia in the hospital. She was on a respirator. She was between life and death. And my grandfather, though he was in the hospital with his own sorrows, before I could even ask him about himself, he was already thinking of my grandmother, when I told him how she was doing. Oy, 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 oy. The whole conversation shifted from him to somebody else. That's what he was thinking about when he was suffering with his own sorrows in the hospital. One final story as well to illustrate the same point of sensitivity to each and every Jew. My uncle remembers 1970-71. My grandfather went to the Ofer of a Talmud of his, whose father was the Rav of the Shul they davened in, a very close supporter of my grandfather. When he arrived in Shul that morning, he had been asked previously to prepare a drasha for the occasion, prepared a very personal drasha about the Talmud, about the Talmud's father, and in Shul he sees there's another chassan, not a member of the Shul. Doesn't always daven there. Needed a place for his Ofer, so he came to this particular Shul. So on the spot, my grandfather scrapped his entire drasha. He apologized to the Baal Simcha. He said, I'll speak personally at the Shefer Brachos. He gave a general drush about Ofrof and Chassanim in general. Why? Because how could he speak about one Chassan when there's another one sitting right there? Such sensitivity. Even though it was a close Talmud of his, but he couldn't offend another Baal Simcha, even if he wasn't a member of the Shul. So what? That's his Simcha too. My own Shalom Zachar, a number of years later, my father at the time was the Rav of the Young Israel of Woodmere. I was my parents' first child, I still am. And my grandfather and my grandparents came for the Simcha, for the Shalom Zacha, for the Bris. I'm their second grandchild. And the Shalom Zacha in Shul that night, Friday night, so the first person gets up to speak, speaks all about Soloveitchik Mishpacha. And my grandfather gets up to speak. And once again, there was another Simcha in the Shul that night, another Shalom Zacha, Jeremy Schlossel. Same week. My grandfather's entire Dvar Torah was about the Shlossel Mishpacha. Can't afford to offend one Baal Simcha at the expense of another by speaking about another. Numerous stories, even more to illustrate the very same points. However, there are a number of other highlights that I think I cannot afford to miss out on. My grandfather had an incredible drive from Midas to MS. Incredible, almost defiant pursuit of MS. No matter what the cost, he was an ish MS. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein described him as a pillar of radical integrity. One example given by Talmud of his in the 60s who accompanied him once to a flight to the airport to fly from New York to Chicago with my grandfather's mother-in-law, my great-grandmother. And as they approach the ticket agent, she says, "Oh, welcome, we have a special today. Buy one ticket, your wife flies free." My grandfather said, "Thank you so much. This is not my wife. I'm sorry, I can't accept. It's my mother-in-law." "Oh, don't worry, Rabbi. We don't ask to see your marriage license." "Do you have the ability," he asked her, "to make this decision for the airline?" I guess not. "Is your supervisor here, please?" She calls the supervisor over. "Sir, do you have the license to make such a decision for the airline to allow me and my mother-in-law to fly? Buy one, get one free?" "I guess not. Thank you. I'll pay for two tickets." Radical integrity. No one asked to pay for two tickets. They offered. Could have been Muhammad Hefter if he wanted to. Radical integrity. Midas ha'emes. He would quote his father, Moshe Soloveitchik Zatzal, in reference to the Maimer Chazal, Chosom Hashal Kadosh Baruch Hu Emes. Moshe Soloveitchik explained, a chosom, a stamp, differs from a chasima, a signature. A chasima, even if it's one person signing his name time and again, each signature is slightly different than the first. You can't replicate the exact same signature any time you sign twice. Slight differences. A chosom, a stamp, is always the same, each and every time. Chosom Hashal Kadosh Baruch Hu Emes, because Emes is Emes. It doesn't change. You don't compromise on Emes. It remains true. If it's halacha, if it's Dibar Hashem, if it's Emes, there's nothing you can do to change it. That's what Emes is, a chosam. It's that same drive for Emes that propelled my grandfather to be the driving force behind the observance of the mitzvah of Yashan in this continent. For decades, everyone assumed that all the fire in the country was Yashan. When my grandfather became the Mashgiach and Strites in 1957, and he was personally dealing with the purchasing of the flour, with the harvesting of the shmura wheat for the matzahs, he realized that's not true, not all the flour is yashan. Nobody kept yashan in those days. He started keeping yashan in 1957. Not one bakery bakes yashan. Where's he going to get yashan from? He bought a freezer. In the summer, he stocked up on challahs, on breads. And when they ran out of frozen challah and bread, sometime in the middle of the winter, for the rest of the winter until Pesach, for months, they ate only matzah. Streitz matzah, which was yashan. That was it. I saw a picture of my uncle's bar mitzvah in the middle of Chodesh Adar, I think it was. On the dais, my uncle, my grandfather, Moshe Feinstein, Yitzchak Kuttner, and a box of Streitz matzahs. That's all they ate. No bread, no cookies, no cake, no crackers. Streitz matzahs, yashan. For months, until Pesach. For years they kept this. When my grandfather came to Chicago in the 60s, and one of the owners of a bakery in town was becoming a little more frum, became Shomer Shabbos, became Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, my grandfather encouraged him to make sure his bakery would be Yashan. That was the first Yashan bakery in the continent, in Chicago. Today, you walk into Brooklyn, into Queens, into Bergen County, into Toronto, any major Jewish community, you'll be hard-pressed to find a bakery that isn't Yashan. All because Rav Aaron Soloveitchik in 1957 started pushing for an observance of mitzvah of Yashan. He spoke about it publicly, how important it is, time and again. And people refused to accept it. They made fun of him, Mechze Kiyura, Ah, Achumra, what are you doing, Motzilaz? Didn't faze him, not for a moment. He felt it was Emes Lahalacha, he kept at it, pursued it with a defiance, you could say. I am going to be Omid al HaEmes. If this is my Emes, this is what I've got to do. And today, Yashan is widespread in North America. All started with that. He was willing to go to any extent to be Shomer al HaEmes. When he came to Chicago in 1966, at that time, many Orthodox Rabbanim had positions in shuls without mechitzas. I don't know how many, but a significant amount. He refused to sign a smicha unless the musmach would first sign a pledge not to take a shul without a mechitza. And when a shul that he would sometimes daven in Chicago was being sold to a sect that worshipped Avodah Zarah Mamish, it's a Japanese sect, he had his Talmidim research it with the Japanese consulate. He spoke personally to the dean of Harvard's Divinity School. He came to the conclusion, this is Avodah Zarah Mamish, he felt it's Isser Gomer to sell the shul to this Avodah Zarah sect. Protested, urged his students to protest. He fought against the sale every ounce of strength he possessed. In his own words, he wrote around that time, "I have always been a fighter for ideas. I fight for ideas with all the moral and spiritual potential that I possess. I will never recede until the truth of halacha prevails." The Zehalasha. He fought against it, and it caused some tremendous political problems in his yeshiva at that time where he was the Rosh Yeshiva. It wasn't his yeshiva, it was the yeshiva where he was the Rosh Yeshiva. My father was a Talmud of his at the time, recalled in the middle of Yardeh Shir, an administration member walks into the shirim, hands my grandfather a note. My grandfather looks at it, reads it. The note says, "If you continue to oppose this sale of the shul, you will lose your job." He turns to Talmud and says, "I don't care. You have to protest. Emes is emes. You can't compromise on emes." So as a man with a family, with children, with no other means of financial support, he was willing to give it all away for emes. Dvar Hashem, halacha, emes. Somebody asked him, "Rav Aaron, wouldn't it be better to do it a little more politically suave, do it a little more, you know, softly, subtly? Why so confrontational? Can't you compromise somewhat?" He quoted Ramban al Torah, "Ara shalaka masdiri al Torah hazos." Ramban says, any melech, any nasi who has an ability to be making as HaTorah biyadam mevatlim osa, if you have the ability to uphold the Torah when some are trying to avoid fulfilling a particular mitzvah, if you're, even if you're tzadik gomer b'maisa, if you're yochel lahafzik b'Torah and you don't, God forbid, ara shalayokim as divrei Torah hazos. He said, "How could I not oppose this?" And he lost his job. Went on and founded his own yeshiva in Brisk, in Chicago. He was willing to be mosa nefesh for emes. Running short on time, I must quickly share with you a few more thoughts. What I remember most vividly of my grandfather was his unbelievable gevura. His strength, his determination, his courage, his iron willpower. He was stricken by a debilitating stroke in 1983 when he was 66 years old. His neurologist, Dr. McMahon, said that the severity of the stroke he suffered was so terrible that any other person would have been stricken to a wheelchair for the rest of his life. My grandfather fought the effects of this stroke with every ounce of moral and spiritual potential he possessed. After his stroke, he had to relearn how to walk step by step. We walk without thinking about it. For him, he had to consciously decide, move my left foot, move my right foot. Every step, you saw the agony on his face, the pain as he would walk. He pushed forward. He refused a wheelchair. He continued to walk at an agonizingly slow pace, despite the agony that it involved, despite the pain, despite the suffering. After his stroke, he accepted an offer from Rabbi Lam to come back to YU, to give shiur in YU once again in September of 1986. Can you imagine? He was a man who should have been in a wheelchair, and yet he undertook for the next 15 years, the last 15 years of his life, to fly every week, leaving Chicago on Tuesday morning, flying to Newark International, and flying back on Thursday so he could be Marbitz Torah and Yeshiva. Unthinkable, and yet he did it for 15 years. The non-Jewish employees at United Airlines were amazed by the heroism they witnessed for so many years. After his patira, Rabbi Wayne Kranz, a Jew from Chicago, calls my uncle Rav Elio and says, "Listen to this story. I was flying from Newark to Chicago, and I was standing in the back of a very long line, and the employee comes over to me and says, 'Do you know the rabbi who used to fly every week from Newark to Chicago for a number of years?' I said, 'Rabbi Soloveitchik?' He said, 'Yes, come with me, front of the line, please.' And I said, 'What are you doing? He said, 'Well, the rabbi died this past year. I wanted to memorialize his memory, wanted to honor his memory. So anyone who knows him, I take the front of the line.'" That's how he's Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Most vividly in my mind is the memory how my grandfather, when he would sometimes be in terrible, terrible pain, whether it be when he was walking or whether he was suffering through a medical procedure that was painful, often I would hear him sing as he would walk. Oda lakele vabchoker, barucho lakeinu shebranu lechvoto, ashrei matov chalkeinu. Those are the songs he would sing. Didn't sing when he wasn't in pain. He wasn't a big singer in general. But when he was in pain, he would sing. He was besimcha because he was pushing himself to achieve his potential in Avodas Hashem. That was reason to sing, to say thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Oda Lakel. I can continue pushing, continue teaching, continue learning, despite my disabilities, despite my Yisurim, pushing myself to my maximum potential in Avodas Hashem. That is reason to sing Shira. I was astounded. Still am. Conclude with one last thought. My grandfather, Zashkof HaShirim, once explained, if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, Perek Hey, Rambam speaks about Kiddush Hashem, Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin al Kiddush Hashem HaGadol Hazeh. Every Jew is commanded to be Mikad Hashem Shemayim. Ketzad, how do you do that, says the Rambam? Well, if a guy forces you under threat of death to violate an Isser Min HaTorah, you violate the Isser. But if it's one of the Gimel Chamorot, then you don't. So my grandfather asked, if you want to tell me about Kiddush Hashem, why do you first tell me about the Averis you're supposed to do? First tell me Yahar V'Yavar. Then tell me Yavar V'Yahari. Why Yavar V'Yahari first? And he explained, because the greatest form of Kiddush Hashem is to be Mekadosh Hashem, not through dying, but through living. Daily sacrifices in daily life, that is the greatest form of Kiddush Hashem. With that he explained the Gemara in Tamid, where the Gemara says that Alexander asked the Chachamim, Mayavit Avar Adam V'Yamus V'Yichya. What should a person do in order to live? So Chazal replied to him, Yomis es atzmo, kill yourself. What does that mean? What should I do to live? Kill yourself? How do you understand that, Gemara? He explained the pshat as follows. Alexander was asking, Mayavid Adam v'yichya, how can a person live al pi kiddush Hashem? The answer is Yomis es atzmo, when you recognize that you're capable of making the ultimate sacrifice, the ultimate mesiras nefesh. How much more so are you then capable of living daily, making the small sacrifices that Kiddush Hashem requires of us? My grandfather was a Jew who was willing to give up his parnasa for MS, who was willing to push himself, suffering terrible Yisroel, to be Marbitz Torah, to perform to his maximum in his Avodas Hashem. Every day of his life was living the small daily sacrifices of Kiddush Hashem. He knew that he could make the ultimate sacrifice, and consequently he was also capable and did indeed make the smallest sacrifices every day of his life, living up the Kiddush Hashem. Havai, we should all be Zotha, to be Mikad Hashem Shemayim, B'chayim, each and every day.